Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Bloodstream Podcast. My name is Patrick James Lynch, and you are listening to a Bloodstream Live from May 4th, 2020, with my friend and the executive director of the New England Hemophilia Association, Rich Pizzillo. It had been a minute since Rich and I caught up, and knowing that both he and I have visible positions in the community, I thought it might be interesting not just to catch up with my buddy, but to do so for the benefit of the greater community, or at least in the context of knowing other people would be listening, such is the case with the podcast. So, to reach people on Facebook who haven't fully migrated over here to the RSS feeds of the world, we record Bloodstream Lives as Facebook Live videos and then bring you the audio here on the podcast. So, in just a moment, you'll be hearing my conversation with Rich Pizzillo from Monday, May 4th, just after I let you know that this podcast and all episodes of the Bloodstream Podcast are made possible by our presenting sponsor, Takeda. Visit bleedingdisorders.com to learn more about Takeda and the work they're doing in response to COVID-19. And with that, please enjoy this conversation with Rich Pizzillo. Look at him looking dapper, as promised, Rich. How are you? Rich, can you hear me?
I hear you, Patrick. Technology, right? It's just one of those things that we all have to get used to in this new world that we're in.
Well, it's funny. We were joking a little bit with challenged dialogue earlier about the wearing the tux and sort of like how we're just adapting to this time and keeping things interesting in general. How have you found we're going on week like 7 or 8 of this now? How are you keeping things interesting for yourself?
Yeah, well, I think doing this, number one, I know, you know, you guys chose the photo from our 60th year gala when I was in the tux, and I know there was a joke from Greg that he wasn't going to tune in unless I wore the tux. But then I started thinking, we've all been in pajamas or clothes that don't match. So why not dress up and use some of the stuff that's in the closet? So I think humor is a big piece of how we get through, because for many of us, if not all of us, it seems like Groundhog Day.
Very much so.
New day at the same time. So there's differences that go along with there.
And what have been some of the surprises that have come up day by day for you during this period?
Yeah, I would say some of the surprises for us include connecting with friends and family that we would not have connected with if the world had not paused. And what I mean by that, I think that there's a sense of going back to the basics of calling people on their birthday instead of just texting them, sending them a postcard or a handwritten note, doing things to connect, because if we were still in this crazy world where we're bebopping from A to B, I think that we wouldn't go back to why does this matter and why does celebrating someone's birthday really make a difference?
Mm. Well, speaking of birthdays, you had one to celebrate that you had to do within the context of this quarantine. Would you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So my husband Michael's birthday was a week from and he loves the mail. And I thought about, okay, how do we make a birthday so unique in a sense where we really can't celebrate with others? So, you know, of course we could do a Zoom or we could do other types of things, FaceTime, et cetera. But what I decided to do is contact friends and family. I turned 35. So the goal was to have 35 letters, notes, postcards, kids drawings sent to the house so that when he goes to open the mail, there's random messages there. We ended up having close to 90 letters and postcards and drawings. And what we ended up doing is did a scavenger hunt. So the entire day, these were scattered all around our house in the bathroom. Some of them are still hidden. We may end up finding them by his next birthday because I can't remember where I put them. But I think those little things just make a difference because it was fun. And I can guarantee you that would have never happened if it wasn't for the fact that we were, you know, kind of stuck in our home with ourselves, but kind of making it interesting, creative, and having a good time at it as well.
Well, it's interesting. Both that and what you said about connecting with family you wouldn't otherwise maybe be connecting with seem like two things that when the stay-at-home lifts and we're back to some semblance of what was, those sound like two things that will carry forward. You know, the thinking of birthdays in that creative, boundaried sort of a way, it leads to this really interesting idea and reconnecting with family you haven't touched base with. Are there other things like that that you find yourself doing or something you've done that maybe you wouldn't have otherwise, but now will take into the future with you?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think one of the biggest things that we've been doing is when you're working from home, or for example, I would drive an hour each way to the office. You get into a routine of this is my morning, this is my afternoon, and this is my evening. What Michael and I have really challenged ourselves to do is around the 5 o'clock hour, stop, put the computer down, and go for a walk. The walk has to be about 20 to 30 minutes. It doesn't matter where we go, but it's been a great way to shut off what's happening in your brain, which for many of us, we can't control anything, and just be outside. You know, regardless if it's raining, we've gone sunny, it doesn't matter, but I find it as a very reinvigorating way of reconnecting with each other, reconnecting and stabilizing yourself too, because you really can't control many things here, but you can control exercise. Very important.
Mm. Have you found that this time reminds you of anything, any period of time in your life before?
Yeah, I would say the most recent time is I had a pretty big surgery about a year and a half ago. And I had to follow the doctor's orders of about 3 months of not lifting anything over 10 pounds and having to stay inside. And it was frustrating. But I also knew, too, I had to do it in order to heal. And I think There's a lot of things here that I could have pushed myself, but I could have done damage. And I think by not... I don't want to use the word obeying, but not following the best practices that a lot of our states have put into place does cause that same risk that we're putting ourselves in jeopardy, others in jeopardy. So it kind of reminds me of that it's frustrating. You could be impatient. But at the same time, too, there's that light at the end of the tunnel. And if you just do kind of what is before you, you will most certainly get there.
You know, you mentioning that surgery and earlier talking about, you know, bouncing around from one place to the next, I can only imagine that this forced time of grounding down has been to some degree welcomed for you and really restorative. Is that true?
There's always a silver lining. I for many of us in the community, especially with chapters, there's events almost every 3 weeks. So the weekends were filled with, in-person events where you see amazing community members and you have fun, but you often neglect the things that you want to work on, cleaning out that closet, doing projects, watching Netflix. You know, I've been able to catch up in the evenings on some really good shows and have enjoyed that with Michael. So I think it's very different than what we're used to, or especially feeling like a ping pong ball sometimes. You know, you're jumping on, getting in the car, going places. But it's still equally as busy because now you're trying to figure out how does everything now convert to a virtual format, which I think is even more challenging because there was an equation before. Sign the contract for the hotel, a venue, have the event, what's the food, what's the childcare, teens, adults. This is very different, and it's not the same. I think many people look upon chapters, NHF, HFA as their sense of comfort or as that place of home. And the reality is in a virtual world, it's not quite the same, even though the heart is still there. And that's something that we've learned of kind of the feedback is I could feel it, but of course it's not the same of being in person.
So what did you think on Friday when NHF announced that the BDC this year will be virtual?
Yeah, I think with any conference, it's sad to not think that we are going to gather in person, but it was by far the right decision to make on behalf of the community. There's so much unknown right now about what the next couple of months look like or even the next year. And having an event move to a virtual format really is, chapters, NEHA, et cetera, applauds NHF for being so proactive in this decision because it helps us to plan. And it also, I think, gives the community who haven't attended before an opportunity to experience what a BDC conference looks like or a national conference, because maybe they couldn't take the time out of work. And I know details are still being worked out, but it's very exciting to think that even more people can have access to national programming that they maybe never had access to before.
That's what I found myself thinking about the most this weekend was like when the decision was actually made, where I found my brain going to was, oh, there's a real nice like level playing field element to this, which is pretty neat. And I'm actually going to use this opportunity as a little bit a shameless plug here. I was mentioning before when Rich and I were having some technical difficulties that the Teen Impact Awards, let's see, what arrangement? Oh my goodness. We did decide in conjunction with NHF's announcement about the BDC being virtual to extend the Teen Impact Awards. You may have seen this image on Friday. It was our last day to apply for the 2020 Teen Impact Awards. But given that now, as Rich was just saying, there's people who are perhaps considering the conference who weren't, and maybe there's people who would like to honor a young person who's doing something particularly notable. The Teen Impact Awards is going to be open for another week for applications. So it'll close on Friday, this coming Friday, the 9th. So teenimpactawards.com for that. Rich, you hosted a virtual meeting this past weekend, and one that to me is sort of in this like 2.0 wave of how do we do this. Like now we've all done some Zooming and some live streams and some YouTube. Everyone's had like a first go or two or three, but now how do we make them more interesting, more engaging? How do we up the ante? And seeing the Bloody Mary event, I was like, oh, that looks like that's what Rich is doing. So tell us about that.
Each year, Neha hosts a virtual, a Bloody Mary competition. It started here in Providence, Rhode Island, where the bars compete to get the trophy for the best bloody for taste and the best bloody for garnish. So the public comes, they buy tickets. The past 2 years, it's sold out. And what I love about this event is out of the 350 tickets we sold last year, only 9 were from our community. So those are people that we recognize that had a bleeding disorder. The rest is the general public. So this is a true awareness campaign and a fundraiser, of course. With so many bars, staff being laid off, bars not being able to offer takeout, there was no way that that we could hold it in person. But sure, really, there was no way that we can ask the bars to even participate because they're already strapped so thin. So we were tasked as an organization as to what to do. We have really two options: cancel the event and refund all the money because we had about 150 tickets already sold. Or do we think outside the box and try something virtually? And I would say that there was mixed emotions. Some people said, sure, we can try it, but it may not work. So we really thought big. What do people need right now? They need humor and they need laughter. They don't want another presentation on a Zoom call where they're looking at slides. They want something right that they can have a good time with. So what we did is we went really extreme in a really positive way, I think. You know, we had a drag queen MC it for us, because who can't make someone laugh than a drag queen? We had live polling. Thank you to the National Hemophilia Foundation for helping us out with this. And then we had a CNN reporter who is a Bloody Mary aficionado, donate his time and teach everyone how to make a good Bloody Mary, which he
wow,
top notch in terms of Bloody Mary fan. Embedded in there, we had five different scavenger hunts. So one of the scavenger hunts was who can get the most number of toilet paper rolls and show it and then type winner in the chat. So we had someone, our board president, Nancy, sorry, Nancy, to out you here, had like 76 rolls of toilet paper at her house. And then we gave prizes away. So they were all Bloody Mary themed prizes. We have so many things left over from our silent auction. We gave gift cards away and other things. And what was awesome about it is out of the people that already bought tickets, the general public, only about 12 asked for refunds. The majority of them said keep the money as a donation. They participated in the virtual format. And we ended up so far made about $6,500 of very low cost in terms of running this fundraiser. So it really shows that I think fundraising in a virtual element is possible and people want to have a good time. So we were totally in uncharted waters, but it was a lot of fun and people said that they had a good time, which is all that matters.
So as someone who has planned his fair share of conferences, who knows this community very well, who knows what the local needs are in your community, who understands the national perspective, you worked at HFA and have been a part of this community your whole life, I'm just genuinely curious to know, when you think about a virtual national conference, where does your brain go? What do you think about first?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think for a virtual national conference, I think to the pillars of education. So that's what these conferences are about. So what physician, doctor, nurse, healthcare provider can give a good look at where we are as a community? Because the reality is we can't bleeding disorder treatment, hemophilia, VWD, doesn't stop because of a pandemic. We're still going to have bleeds. Treatments are still going to come out. The questions still remain, how do I make informed decisions? So I think in a virtual realm, having an opportunity to have connections or listen to a speaker that maybe is out west, that hasn't had a chance to come out east, or is only at national conference. Then I think, you know, the support element, how do we connect with the support feature by connecting, you know, I look at the HFA model of blood brothers, blood sisters. You know, I think it would be really cool in a big virtual setting to have people connect. I have no idea how that would work, but I think it's a great opportunity. And I think that there's so many other elements in terms of having access to these things without having to fly to a certain place, be in a hotel. I mean, there is an element that is going to be completely different. You know, hugging someone and being with someone in a room, going to the bar at night and enjoying a drink or sitting outside after the conference can't be done in a virtual element. But I often think that when you close your eyes and go back to a great experience, you can always go there. What we're saying with our camp is not a place. It lives in your heart. While it sounds corny, I truly believe that any positive experiences in your life, you could always go back to if you can imagine yourself there.
It's interesting you say that. This is a whole nother topic, but the pain podcast is something Bloodstream Media is releasing right now and that I've been working on personally for several months. And talking about the neuroplasticity of the brain and how in the experience of pain, for example, it can come as a result of what we are used to. So in the same way, you know, what we are used to, we have to work mindfully to change that. Otherwise, our bodies and ourselves, we sort of default to the same habits and routines. The good news is you can tap into that for the reasons you're describing, which is to kind of reconnect to a time that was really important. I know in my actor training work back in the day, so much of the foundation was about just reconnecting to your own life experiences and memories and what they do to the body. And so much work that I now do in the context of therapy, I'm like, oh, I first was introduced to this in the context of acting school. That's so surprising that they're that different. One of the other things that I was introduced to acting school and am talking about in therapy a lot is intimacy. And that's been a subject that's been interesting to me these past number of weeks and months as well. How do we still build intimacy and maintain intimacy and nurture intimacy in the ways that it is important? So maybe both from a community perspective and from a personal perspective, how has intimacy changed in your world in the last 2 months?
Yeah, I think it's a real element of life. No matter where you live, intimacy, love, feelings, and that's something that's tough right now, right? We can't hug each other. You know, you can't go to mom's house and give her a hug, or, you know, our nieces and nephews only live a couple of miles away, and it's tough not to go over there and hang out with them. Everyone wants to be with kids right now. I think it's reimagining in a different way of connecting. I know for us, handwriting letters and putting a postcard in the mail is something that's super special and goes back to the basics. You know, here at home, you know, it's going to sound a little corny, but I love that, you know, we do this, putting notes around the house and saying, hope you have a great day, even though that I know, you know, Michael's right upstairs. I may go 5-6 hours without seeing him.
Sure.
I think it's reimagining what this looks like, you know, a little bit. And I think with the community, is there's so many emails right now, there's so many Facebook and social media posts, is going back to what can we do to show that element in person? And the only way we can do that right now is by mailing things. So we're working out a camp in a box, you know, thinking outside the box, literally, like what can go in here so that when people open it, they can feel something. Because you know this, you know, extremely well, Patrick, people won't remember what was said during this time. They will remember how someone or something made them feel. And mm-hmm. I think that that's an important piece to remember, that we are all in this together, but we also have to think through of like, what do the kids need right now? And maybe the kids don't need anything more than a Zoom or a Google Classroom, that they need stuff that's mailed to them. So I think we're still all learning this, but I think it's something that kind of evolves each day as well in terms of making sure that those natural human traits are being kind of addressed.
Have you found it difficult to talk about anything other than COVID?
I find myself, I'll start there, when I have downtime, and I'm sure I'm not the only one out there, checking numbers. I'm a data person, so I like seeing what the heck is happening with medical facts. So I have to stop myself from watching the news a lot. There was a while that when my go-to at night would be to watch news, and I had a conversation with Michael where I'm like, I have to stop because we can't control this. So I think, you know, a big piece is not talking about COVID goes into how else do we just be us again? How do we be a son? How do we be a friend? How do we be a parent? And I think that there's ways around there. I mean, seeing so many social media posts of people with their kids, I love it. And it's so creative doing the painter's tape and the chalk and leaving it out there to bring smiles to the post person or to the neighbors, seeing elements of that. But I think it is tough to talk about anything else. You know, I look at it, my mom's been laid off. She's a daycare worker. So she's home a lot. My dad's a mechanic and he's still working and is exposed because he's fixing the fire trucks and the police stations for the town that we grew up in. So it's a very different look at, you know, my brother's been laid off. And you know, for us personally, it's tough not to talk about these things because it's affecting you financially, it's affecting you emotionally, it's affecting you physically. I think I could probably speak for a lot of people out there when you're home, going to that fridge behind me and getting snacks that you don't need. It's so tempting. I'm like, I don't need to eat. It's been my like third time eating in the past hour. I think finding that balance of around, okay, maybe it's time to do something else or go for that other walk or do something, you know, that doesn't involve that. But I do think it is tough not to talk about COVID-19 related things right now.
So something else that you and I have chatted a little bit about, taking a bit of a turn maybe, is the idea of family planning. You know, as two guys about the same age who are married, who are in these conversations with our partner and with everybody else who asks all the time, I know it's an ongoing conversation in your household as it is in mine, and this of course has entered the matrix, so to speak, in the decision matrix, as a consideration for Natalie and I. How have you and Michael sort of processed that aspect of your lives given the current situation, and to the point you just made, not just the immediacy of this virus, but the downstream economic, social, cultural, physical implications of it? It's not just something that's going to be affecting us for the short term. So I'm just curious to know how your family planning has been impacted, if at all, by this.
Yeah. Thank you for asking that, Patrick. I know I've had conversations with you. More than anything in our life right now as partners, we want to be dads. And it's daunting to think in this current world that we live in, when you talk about financial and family planning, there's a big, unfortunate potential black cloud over that because there's so much uncertainty. And what we've decided to do is life will not stop because of this, but what life will do is open that door to say, we want to be parents more than anything. And that's going to be a priority of when you want something so bad in life, you will do whatever it takes to make that happen. And I think that that's something that we've been, you know, kind of talking about, is putting a plan together, not making excuses, having that written down as to say, is this going to be an adoption, a surrogacy, and what's a timeline associated with this? Because I'm not sure for those that have parents, if it's easier right now to be in quarantine with kids to keep you occupied or to just have your significant other. Because I will say that there is there's, you know, any couple that hasn't had a spat or a disagreement or maybe got on each other's nerves is totally maybe not saying the absolute truth. It's really tough, especially when you live in small quarters and then add a family to that. But I think the family aspect is for us what life is about. And we want that more than anything. And I know during this maybe slower time of not be bouncing all the way around is where we've decided that we want to put that plan together, no matter what that road is, road A all the way to Z, because there's many opportunities when you talk about family planning, what that looks like, and make sure that we start going down that road and making it happen, because that's something we can control. COVID-19, we can't. Family planning, there's a lot of options out there. And it's something that, again, we want it to happen and we're going to make it happen.
Are there other priorities that have bubbled up for you during this time that when you want to kind of keep in mind as we go forward?
I would say that letting go. So let me back up. For those that know me, and I see Jeremy's on here, he will say this, I'm a perfectionist. And I know I probably have some OCD tendencies. And for those that also share this, they could probably understand where I'm coming from. It's really humbling in a time like this to let go of what you can't even think about trying to fix. I'm a fixer. I've always been a considerate, trying to do what's best. But I think what we can do as chapter leaders, as people, as friends, is just do what we can to listen, do what we can to show love, be empathetic, and weather this together. I think that's something that I've learned during this, is that it's okay not to have a multitude of events and schedules and always have to be on the go, that in the quiet time, it's actually even more opportunities for growth than it is sometimes when you're going so fast that you forget who you are and you forget what life is about.
That resonates. Yeah, that resonates big time. I feel as though in many ways I'm kind of in a continual process of processing events from the last 7 years. Like there's not been enough time sometimes during the actual rush of things that 2, 3, 4 months later, a year later, I find myself actually processing on a deep level, a moment in time. So that's great advice. Switching gears a little bit, maybe as we start to sort of wrap up here, one thing that I'm interested to hear your perspective on is the relationship between our two national organizations. So last year, with so much change on the horizon, there was a lot of discussion, as we both know, and probably a lot of people tuning into this, about what maybe these leadership changes at the two national organizations might mean at a larger level for how our community functions and how these organizations serve us best. There seems to me that there's been some really great collaboration and efforts to collaborate on initiatives between HFA and NHF in 2020. However, the last couple months have overshadowed that in large part. So I'd be curious to hear from your perspective how you see the two organizations operating in encouraging ways this year and maybe some things you'd like to see them still address.
What I've seen on with chapters is a true unity of helping each other through this, whether it's South Carolina, California, Washington, New York, is what does collaborative spirit mean? And there's so much of sharing ideas, sharing documents, not taking ownership and saying, hey guys, if this is helpful for you, run with it. I don't think I've ever had a time where I'm talking with more chapter leaders and brainstorming. And it's been amazing to see that effort. At the same time, the national organizations, I think, are doing a really good job of trying to address this unprecedented time. And what I mean by that is when this started, NHF and HFA host weekly platforms for the chapter leaders. So every Wednesday at 4 o'clock, chapter leaders have the option of jumping on a Zoom call to discuss topics with HF has it on there. HFA also has representation on there as well. And I think with both new CEOs at the helm, no one could have imagined this come January or February when they both took over and were announced. But at the end of the day, I think in times of adversity is where true leadership truly shines. It's not when we are skipping in a daffodil field loving life where we're going to grow. It's actually when we're in our darkest moments. You know, I think back to times when, whether I was in the hospital or I had a bleed, and although it completely was challenging and tough, I grew the most during that time. So I use that analogy as to say, I think this is the example and this is the time for our community to continue to not only work together, but imagine things unthinkable that we couldn't do before. And we're so lucky that in 2020, we have technology like this, that it may not work all the time the way we wanted, but that doesn't matter, because this today was an example of what life is. Life is never perfect. If life was perfect, we are creating a facade for each other, and that's not realistic. So I think to answer your question, I am hopeful and I'm elated to see the collaboration that has happened, the support that's come down to local organizations, and the efforts on a local level of chapters coming together to really think through. I know here in New England, we have 3 chapters, and I'm proud of the work that we're doing to not try to be redundant in a virtual world, but also to work together to make sure that we're serving the community. Mission comes first. And if we can fulfill our missions, then we're doing what we're supposed to be doing.
All right. And maybe as a final question, Rich, is there one creature comfort that you have that has been a savior to you at times during this that perhaps might be useful for others to hear about?
Yeah, I would say that two things, if I could say two certain things.
Of course.
One, for those that know me, I love plants. Ever since I was a kid, I would spend time sitting in the dirt planting tomatoes, and I would have some pretty epic tomato plants because I give them a lot of food and I grow a lot of things. So I would say as we're getting into the warmer seasons, for me, having something every morning to look as to water to have responsibility for, to see how they're growing, if the sun doesn't hit a certain way, readjusting. I feel like I have a relationship with my plants. I have a variety of them. So I think, you know, having a hobby is an okay thing, whether it's a stamp collection, a rock collection, a plant collection, it doesn't matter. And then taking that outside to the warmer months. I would say for comfort, we treat ourselves. So for example, there's an amazing donut shop here in Providence. They're sold out even online. And we know every Sunday, every other week, we order our favorite donuts. Yesterday, I stood in line to just pick up for 20 minutes, socially distancing. But it was something I looked, and Michael did too, looked forward to, because we don't do it every day. We don't do it every week. We do it every 2 weeks on a Sunday morning. We go and get our favorite donuts and we order ahead of time. And it's something where we create traditions. We've also, I think, started eating together. It's so often that we weren't using the dining room table, or we would be just be, you know, having the TV on, but creating different traditions that you have now are totally things that can take you through, not just through this pandemic, but fast forward a year from now, you know, and challenge yourself to shut off that TV, put some music on, talk about your relationship and what are your challenges, listening to each other during the day. So I guess, Patrick, that was 3 things I just mentioned, but those are the 3 things that, you know, I could just come to my mind there.
No, those are all great. Traditions and routines. I mean, as you used the word earlier, reimagining, I think, as it related to intimacy. And I think that's such a word, like coming out of this conversation, I feel like a lot of what we're talking about relates to this concept of reimagining. And I asked you earlier about how do you talk about things other than COVID. I think I'm learning the answer to that is by reimagining the nature of the conversation a little bit. We can't not talk about, to earlier points, the health, financial, social, physical impact of all this. This is a huge deal, but it's where we focus the energy of the conversation. Is it on the challenges and the fear and the uncontrollables, or is it on the effort to reimagine how we move forward, how we continue to educate and engage and find value from all the things that we once did in a new way? So I think those are really great points. I also have to, I said that was going to be the last question, but 15 minutes before we started recording, I remembered something that I have to tell you about from Friday. And I was trying to take a photo of it, and I have never been more let down by my iPhone. And that's saying a lot. Also, what a privileged thing to be able to say. I've never been more let down by my iPhone. Woe is me during the COVID era. But that being said, I was trying to take a photo of something that I was like, this is great. And the camera would not, it just black screened me the whole time. I have plenty of space, don't know why. But what was happening and why I was so frustrated, I was infusing. And I was a little bit distracted, and I was thinking about, like, I wanted to go work out and whatever else I was thinking about. So I always stick myself, you know, in my left hand, and good, blood return, good. I'm like, not even really aware that I'm infusing at the moment. And then I go to unclip the tourniquet, and the tourniquet was on my right arm. The tourniquet was on the arm with the needle. And I infused veins that were strong enough that they were bulging, and I got a blood return. And it wasn't until I went to get rid of the tourniquet that I realized, like, oh, and I got a little tingliness going on in this hand. So then, and then I try to become the content guy. So I've got the needle and the blood return, and I'm like, this is funny. I got to get a picture of this with the tourniquet. And I, and my phone failed me. So I, 15 minutes before we jumped on this, I was like, you know, at least I can share this story with Rich, and he'll know what I'm, he'll know the kind of thing I'm talking about.
Telling story of where we are right now in terms of not even being able to keep track of things like that.
That is a very good point. That is a very, very good point. Rich, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for catching up with me this way. One nice thing that a buddy of mine in New York, a high school friend of mine, said to me Friday, and I feel that way right now. At least since we're all engaging with each other online, you don't feel as far away as you once did. You know, New England and Southern California are as far away as, you know, Los Angeles and San Diego right now. So for all intents and purposes, it's nice to feel a little bit closer to you. And thanks for coming on to share personally as well as your perspective on the community, man. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Patrick. I really appreciate it. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in.
All right, bloodstreammedia.com to learn more about what we're doing, the New England Hemophilia Association. If you're unfamiliar with this beautiful man in a tuxedo and want to learn more about his organization, new pain pod coming on Wednesday, and we will talk to you again soon. Thanks, everybody. Thank you to my friend Rich Pizzillo. Thank you to everybody who participated in the Bloodstream Live on Monday the 4th. And thank you, as always, to Takeda for making the Bloodstream podcast possible, bleedingdisorders.com to learn more about them. But before we go, I have something special to offer you. My first cousin, Nella Dwyer, is a singer-songwriter in Ireland. In fact, she was on The Voice of Ireland a few years back. They're equivalent to America's Got Talent, so to speak, or The Voice, or, you know, those shows. And she's also the female vocalist for the World of Warcraft Legion, which came out a few years ago. But the reason that I am mentioning her now is she just released a single called We're All in This Together. Of course, it is inspired by the current circumstances, and on the heels of Rich literally saying that very thing today in our discussion, I asked Nella if she wouldn't mind our sharing her song here at the end of the Bloodstream podcast. It's a song that she created along with another Irish musician, Donal Looney, and we are very thankful that they agreed to let us play it for you here. So please enjoy Nella Dwyer's We're All in This Together, and we will talk to you again very soon.
Put your coat on, we're going outside, where we'll all be together in the cold we don't mind. We'll kick out the gold leaves that leave us behind, and we'll sing and we'll dance just like we used to do. Thank you. fire.